ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
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 ॐ नमो भगवते
I'm really getting to sink here. I'm always in a foreign country, so I'm used to this is my first lecture. It'll take me a minute, quite a lot. I know English, right? I think the last time I was here was, I don't know, probably the last time I gave a lecture here. It was quite some time back.
Last year, same day.
Last year, same day?
Same day.
Really?
Yeah.
Well.
Good memory.
Okay. And I was noting the introduction. I should make a little correction. Yes, it's true, I was building houses before I came to Krishna consciousness. When people ask me when did I first meet Srila Prabhupada, my immediate answer is I met him in 1972, and they ask me, where did you meet him? And I said, in a bookstore. And they say, really, what was he doing in a bookstore? And I said, he was sitting on a shelf. It was my first meeting with Prabhupada. And I know devotees oftentimes, and it's very beneficial, we all derive great benefit from hearing devotees from their different experiences and their contact with Srila Prabhupada, because we know that even a moment's association with Srila Prabhupada, even a moment's association with a pure devotee of the Lord, Tuliyama Lalina Pina Swagamna Pinabhavan, as Bhagavatam states, a valuable moment's association with the devotee of the Lord cannot be compared to elevation to the heavenly planets, to liberation from matter, or to worldly prosperity, which is ultimate for those who are meant for death. So any moment's association with Srila Prabhupada is certainly a momentous occasion for one's life, and I have been fortunate enough to say that at least I was there. I did see Srila Prabhupada and I did attend his lectures. But for me, the most important meeting, I have to honestly say, was in 1972 in the bookstore. And I always try to give reference to that because I feel it's very important for devotees to know that for generations to come, they can meet Prabhupada in the same way. And he's accessible. And Chaitanya Charitamrita describes Kaviraj Goswami describes that Lord Chaitanya is an ocean of mercy because although the subject matter of bhakti is very difficult to understand, he has nonetheless made it very accessible to everyone in this world. So we understand also that Srila Prabhupada, being Lord Chaitanya's ambassador, he has made Krishna consciousness so accessible through his books. Not only has he made himself, as he said, that he will live forever in his books, and we can feel his personal presence by coming in contact with him by reading his books, but he has made Krishna accessible as well by purely presenting Krishna's teachings without any interpretation and distortion. and therefore the actual message can shine through. How many times I'm sure many devotees can testify that by reading Srila Prabhupada's books, it increases their faith, it saves them. I had those experiences in my early days of Krishna consciousness, so therefore I always give testimony that my meeting with Prabhupada first was in that bookstore, and I encourage it. In fact, the irony of it is, I tell this story, I was living in Washington, D.C. at the time, and I was doing carpentry work, and I went into a bookstore to purchase a book on yoga. It was Pentamin, I think it was called. And I went into the yoga session, and I saw this Bhagavad Gita. I opened it up, and the first picture I saw was the yogi sitting in meditation, and how the yogi was just showing how he was going through different chakras and coming out from the top of his head, and there on top was Radha Krishna. And I became so intrigued by the book, I thought it must have been a very good book of yoga. And then when I purchased it, I paid the money that was on the back of the book, and I found out 20 years later that book was never in the inventory of the bookstore, that one devotee had gone in there and just left it on the bookstore. So he said, yeah, I used to go to all those bookstores, and he just dropped it on the bookshelf and left it there. And of course they took money from me. But that's how I got that Bhagavad Gita as it is. And then I used to go home, and every night we read it very religiously after coming home from work. So, yes, Srila Prabhupada is still accessible. And I was going to read from Srimad Bhagavatam. It's already 7 o'clock. Oh my God. Okay, let's see what we can do. Fourth canto, eighth chapter. 30. Yes, 34th verse. I'll read the Sanskrit. Gunadhikan udham lipsed anukrosham gunadhamad maitrin samanad anvichchen natapar abhibhuyate. Translation. Every man should act like this. When he meets a person more qualified than himself, he should be very pleased. When he meets someone less qualified than himself, he should be compassionate toward him. And when he meets someone equal to himself, he should make friendship with him. In this way, one is never affected by the threefold miseries of this material world. Purport. Generally, when we find someone more qualified than ourselves, we become envious of him. When we find someone less qualified, we deride him. And when we find someone equal, we become very proud of our activities. These are the causes of all material tribulations. The great sage Narada therefore advised that a devotee should act perfectly. Instead of being envious of a more qualified man, one should be jolly to receive him. Instead of being oppressive to a less qualified man, one should be compassionate toward him, just to raise him to the proper standard. And when one meets an equal, instead of being proud of one's own activities before him, one should treat him as a friend. One should also have compassion for the people in general who are suffering due to forgetfulness of Krishna. These important functions will make one happy within this material world. Omayana Timurandasya This verse is spoken by Narada Muni to Dhruva Maharaj, and it may be a little bit helpful to try to put the verse a little bit into context and why Narada Muni is instructing Dhruva Maharaj at this particular time about this important topic, which unfortunately even Dhruva Maharaj was not able to accept at that time, but that doesn't diminish in any way the subject matter of the verse. But for most of us, we're sure we are aware of how Dhruva Maharaj happened to come in contact with Narada Muni. It all began in the palace of his father, Maharaja Dhanapada. And when King Bhutanapad was sitting on his throne, his son, Bhutama, sat on his lap, and Dhruva Maharaj had a desire to, he felt that he should be equally received by his father, and he went to sit on his father's lap. And his stepmother, Suruchi, who was the favorite of King Bhutanapad, she spoke up in protest and said, "You cannot sit on your father's lap." She was feeling somewhat envious towards Dhruva Maharaj. And she tried to explain to him that that you're not qualified to sit on your father's lap because you did not take birth in my womb. This pupil was the son of Suniti, who was a co-wife of Maharaja Dhanapada, who had another queen. And Suruchi, she said that if you want to sit on your father's lap, I recommend that you can go to the forests, seek out an opportunity to find the Supreme Lord who can fulfill all your needs, whatever your desire is. And if you have a desire to sit on the father's lap, then you should approach that Supreme Lord by processing meditation. And when we come in contact with him, and he's ready to give you a benediction, then you should ask for that benediction. That the benediction you should ask for, that is, you have the great fortune to take birth in the next life in my womb. And if you take birth in the next life in my womb, then certainly you can sit on your father's lap. Now, of course, it was very difficult for this boy to accept that, and was even more difficult as when he looked to his father, Solis, his father didn't say anything. And he was compromised, and therefore, in great anger, in fact, it's described that he was very, very disturbed, and he was seething like in anger. He decided to go to his mother, who was in the palace, and when he went to his mother, many of the people in the palace had already witnessed it, and saw it, they were also present. And when his mother saw his son Dhruva, she asked him what is wrong, and then everyone who had been present immediately started to explain the event that had taken place with Dhruva Maharaj. She became very disturbed as well. She was also feeling anger, but when she looked within her own heart, she determined that she could find no remedy whatsoever to the anxiety she was feeling, to her son, what her son was feeling. And she felt that the best remedy that she could offer for her son, and the first thing she said to him, is that he should not wish any inauspiciousness upon anyone, and neither should you cause pain to anyone, because if you willfully cause pain to someone, it will come back and bring you pain in the future. So that was her first recommendation to Dhruva Maharaj. Don't seek revenge. And she felt that that was the best she could come up with. Of course, they have to be the best. But sometimes in that difficult situation, we may not be able to access that best state of consciousness. It's just usually when something like that happens to us, when we're insulted or disturbed. In fact, I often quote the verse of Srimad Bhagavatam that is spoken by Parikshit Maharaj, it was spoken by Swami Parikshit about Parikshit Maharaj. And Tiraskrita Vipralabdha Kshatta Kshita Hatha Inasita Kuruvati Sadbhakta Kava Yogi. Now, Swami Parikshit quoted this verse in reference to Parikshit Maharaj because he found out, and I'll translate it in a moment, but because he found out what his son had done, Sringi. His son Sringi, being very disturbed because he thought his father had been insulted by Parikshit Maharaj, when Parikshit Maharaj went to Swami Parikshit's hermitage, Swami Parikshit was sitting in deep meditation, and he did not even recognize the presence of Parikshit Maharaj. And Parikshit Maharaj, who had been hunting in the forest, he was very thirsty, he was looking for water. In China, I suppose, as a matter of fact. So I'm not going to blame anybody for some big. When Swami Parikshit learned, usually I always say it's more important for the translator's mic to work better than mine. It doesn't make any difference because usually nobody understands what I'm saying. What happened was, Swami Parikshit was in deep meditation, Maharaj Parikshit was hunting, he came to his hermitage, and he asked for some water, but he didn't respond, and Maharaj Parikshit became very angry because Swami Parikshit did not respond. As we know, he took a snake that was lying nearby, a dead snake, and he grounded it around Swami Parikshit's neck in an attempt to punish him. Of course, it's explained by Prabhupada in the commentary that ultimately this was an arrangement, an internal arrangement of the Lord, whereas Parikshit was not capable of performing or being envious of anyone, but it was an arrangement so that Srimad Bhagavatam could be spoken to him by Shukadeva Goswami. Nonetheless, when he garlanded that snake around Swami Parikshit, and then his son Sringi found out about it, Sringi was very disturbed. great anxiety, and because he had Brahma Tejas, he had brahminical powers, he decided to exercise his brahminical powers by cursing Maharaj Pariksit to die in 7 days by the snake bird. And then after cursing him, he returned to the hermitage where his father was. He looked at his father and began crying to see his father still deeply in meditation, the snake around his neck. And when his father heard the crying of his son, then he came back to external consciousness and asked his son, "What is it? What's wrong? What has happened? Has somebody caused some disturbance for you?" And he saw the snake around his neck and cast it aside. He didn't think it was something very significant. But then Shri explained to him that what he had done, that the snake was placed around his neck by Maharaj Pariksit, and he had cursed him for what he had done. Now, Swami Kavishi knew very well that Maharaj Pariksit was a great saintly king, pure devotee of the Lord, and that in no way representative of the Lord should a representative of the Lord be treated in this way by his son. So he was greatly lamenting, and he was thinking at that point that the best thing that could happen to my son is that Pariksit Maharaj would come to curse him. And he was thinking that would be the best arrangement. So, but then, after further deliberation, he realized and quoted this verse, Taraskritavi Balam Rakshatakshita Hataha Vina Sitapa Kuranti Tadbhakta Kava Yogihi. The devotees of the Lord are so forbearing that even if they are cheated, disturbed, insulted, neglected, cursed, or even killed, they're never inclined to avenge themselves. So by thinking in this way, he realized, what hope will there be for Pariksit Maharaj to curse my son? There's no hope, because he's a devotee of the Lord. He would never think of counter-cursing. So at that point, Swami Kavishi just folded his hands in desperate prayer, prayed to the Lord that if you find it fit for my son to be punished appropriately, well, let you punish him for what he has done, because I can't depend on Pariksit Maharaj to punish him. So, it's a very telling verse, and it also helps us to explain why Suniti was saying something very similar to Dhruva Maharaj. She said, don't wish anything inauspicious to your stepmother, and don't do anything to cause her pain. If you willfully cause pain to somebody, then this will come back and will cause pain upon you in the future. Therefore, and this is also another important point, actually, our acharyas, Jiva Goswami, he speaks about this in his Bhakti Sandarbha. He explains that the characteristic of a Vaishnava, that one of the characteristics which Lord Chaitanya has given, Janata Pisa Nichinata Rari Vasa Nishana Mani Namani Dhamma Kirtana that a Vaishnava should always be willing to offer respect to everyone, never expect respect for himself. And Srila Jiva Goswami in the Bhakti Siddharma describes the characteristics of what disrespect towards other living entities are. And he specifically states that disrespect towards other living entities is to not recognize that the super soul is there within the heart, and therefore anyone who willfully causes pain to another living entity, willfully causes pain, then of course he'll have to experience pain on reaction to that pain in the future. And he gives an explanation to that, what are some of the things in the category of willfully causing pain. And he quotes one verse from the 11th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is spoken by the Avanti Brahman. And he says that sharp arrows that pierce the chest and come close to the heart are not as painful than the arrows of insulting words of a materialistic person which pierce the heart and become lodged there. So he specifically states that even more painful than a sharp arrow that pierces the chest is the arrow of insulting words of a materialist that enters in the heart and becomes lodged there, causes pain. When such a person willfully causes pain to another living entity, then there are consequences to that. And as we know, there's a well-known story in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, which gives a similar concept of this. It's speaking about the story of Narada Muni and Magari the hunter. As we know, Magari, he was willfully causing pain to other living entities. He was taught in his very childhood by his father to use his weapons, his arrows, for half-killing animals. And one time Narada Muni, who happened to be traveling, came upon that place, and he came upon that place where Magari was shooting his arrows, and it was a rabbit, and then a deer, and a boar, one after the other. They were lying there along the path, and they were writhing in pain. And he couldn't understand, why is this happening? Why are these animals being shot by an arrow and they're not being killed, but they're being half-killed? And they're suffering so much by being half-killed. And look off at the distance, he saw Magari the hunter. At that time, as a hunter was standing behind a tree, and he immediately realized that this hunter must be the person who's responsible for causing the pain to these animals. So he started to walk off the path towards the hunter, and when he started to walk off the path towards the hunter, all the other animals that were in the vicinity, they began to flee. And of course Magari became very angry. He came out from behind the tree and said, "Look what you've done. You know, you've caused all the animals to flee." And Narada Muni asked him, "Look, have you done this?" And he was pointing to the animals who were lying half dead on the ground. And he said, the guy said, "Yes." "And why have you done this?" He said, "I've been trained from birth. My father's trained me to do this. This is my profession. I'm a hunter. And I half kill animals. And I enjoy watching them suffer until they die." So then Narada Muni, after hearing Magari saying this, he said, "I have one humble request." And Magari said, "What is it? Would you like some animal skins?" And he thought, you know, he was going to beg, "I want to beg one thing from you." And Narada Muni says, "No, I'm not coming to beg anything of that sort. Is I've come to beg of you. You're a hunter by profession, and killing animals is a small offense on your part, because that's your by profession. But by half killing them and purposely causing pain to them in this way, you are going to get such a reaction." And he began to explain the intricacies of the laws of karma, that anyone who willfully causes pain to somebody will subsequently have to experience the reaction for them. And after explaining all that to Magari the hunter, then Magari could understand, "Yes, I've done something, and I'm going to have to immediately ask how to rectify himself for what he has done." As a result of Narada Muni's association, he could understand that he shouldn't have killed or intentionally cause pain to the animals in this way. In the same way, Jiva Goswami says, and he uses the same example of an analogy of the arrows, that the arrow that pierces the chest and comes close to the heart is not as painful as the arrows of insulting words that go into the heart and become lodged in.
And Jiva Goswami says, that is disrespect to a living entity. And anyone, and of course Lord Chaitanya has given the instruction that we should never disrespect all living entities. In fact, there's one verse, it's in the Chaitanya Bhagavad. I gotta get to Dhruva Maharaj. I'm very limited on the amount of time I have. But I think this is relevant, so I'll continue to speak on this topic. That this is from Chaitanya Bhagavad, Majikanda. Vaishnava Hingsara Kata Se Takuk Dure Sahaja Jivere Ajama Pirukari. What to speak of being envious of Vaishnavas? If one causes pain to ordinary living entities, he is considered a fallen low-class person. Even after worshipping Lord Vishnu, if a person gives trouble to other living entities, his worship becomes fruitless. Such a person suffers unlimited miseries. And Śrīla Bhaktisiddhānta Saraswati Thakura in his Tika says, if a person is knowingly or unknowingly envious of a Vaishnava engaged in the non-duplicitous service of Lord Hari, his degradation is inevitable. Of this there is no doubt. Apart from this, if even persons claiming to be devotees of Vishnu are envious of ordinary living entities and give various troubles to them, they are actually far away from devotional service to Vishnu and are not fit to be called human beings. Their worship of Vishnu becomes the source of misery. Those endowed with an absence of jiva-daya, or compassion for other living entities, and yet proudly consider themselves servants of Lord Vishnu, achieve the threefold miseries rather than the devotional service of the Lord. So Suniti was telling Dhruva Maharaj, don't wish anything inauspicious for Suruchi, your stepmother. And she was saying, please don't try to cause her pain. And of course, of what we heard about Pariksha Maharaj, don't seek vengeance, because the devotees of the Lord are not supposed to seek vengeance. They're supposed to be so tolerant that even if they are cheated, neglected, disturbed, insulted, cursed, or even killed. Someone may say, you're going to kill, well, what's he going to do if he's going to kill? But actually, as we know from many examples in the Bhagavatam, that some persons who were in a previous life were mistreated by somebody else, they came back in the next life to cause pain to the persons who mistreated them. Prabhupada even says in the commentary of the story about Hashashoka, who was the son of Chitraketu Maharaj, Hashashoka, who was going to be the cause of both of his happiness and distress. So Prabhupada suggested in the commentary in that verse that this living entity, Hashashoka, possibly was an enemy from a previous life who came back, who was mistreated by Chitraketu, and came back in this life to cause him pain. So yes, even those who are killed are never inclined to avenge themselves. This is a Vaishnava. So Suniti's instructions, of course, were already good in themselves to Dhruva Maharaj. But Dhruva Maharaj took the other instruction that Suniti gave him, that what your stepmother Suruchi has just recommended to you, to go to the forest, was a very good suggestion. She said, I think that you should go to the forest and engage in mystic yoga, perform devotional service, and in this way, if you want the fulfillment of your desires, you should go and ask the Lord for the fulfillment of your desires, because he can fulfill everyone's desires. And he said, even your father, you know, your grandfather, Swayambhuva Manu, he achieved all of his results of his sacrifices as a result of his worshipping of the Supreme Lord. And your great-grandfather, Lord Brahma, he worshipped the Lord to become empowered in order to create the universe. So I think you have such a good heritage. Your grandfather, Swayambhuva Manu, your great-grandfather, Lord Brahma, follow in their footsteps. Worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead and get the fulfillment of your desires. Now, of course, as we know, Dhruva Maharaj had some desires in his heart. But unfortunately, those desires were revenge. And when he entered into the forest, when Narada Muni happened to come to that place, Narada Muni tried to sway Dhruva Maharaj from his mindset. And he suggested to him, he said, "You're a young boy, only 5 years old. You know, great sages and ascetics, much more senior than you, have gone to the forest to perform mystic yoga in order to see the Supreme Lord. And they did it for such a long time, and they were not even successful. You're a five-year-old boy. What do you think you're going to accomplish, a five-year-old boy, going to the forest performing mystic yoga and austerities?" And he said, "Why don't you just try to become peaceful and pacified, content, and become equipoised to happiness and distress?" And then one of the instructions he gave him was this verse, was this is how to become happy in this world, that if you see somebody superior to you, you should not be envious of them. If you see somebody equal with you, you should be friendly towards them. If you see somebody who's not as advanced as you, you should be very kind and compassionate to them. And as Prabhupada says, not to deride them. Of course, all these instructions are given to Dhruva Maharaj, and Dhruva Maharaj had to confess after hearing these instructions from Narada Muni. He said, "Actually, my spirit is such that, and I have this kshatriya blood in me, that everything you've told me is all well and good, but it doesn't touch my heart." And I think that's 7:30, we can have to end. Any questions or comments on anything they've discussed so far?
The instruction given, I want to know how to balance that with the fact that, like in the story of Duryodhana and Yudhisthira being instructed by Dronacharya, and Duryodhana going out and he couldn't find anybody who was better than him, but Yudhisthira, the devotee, couldn't find anybody who was worse than him. So it seems that the devotee's mentality should be to think that everyone is better than him. But then there's the discrimination described in this verse. How do we balance those things?
Yes, there is discrimination, and Srila Rupa Goswami also instructs us in the Upadesha-mrita how we should discriminate. We should discriminate when we see somebody who's chanting the names of Krishna, and him, although he may be chanting Krishna's names, but his behavior may not be perfect, we should still offer respect within our minds and existence, because we have to make distinctions. Distinctions are given in the Bhagavatam. There are different levels of spiritual advancement. There are Prakriti Bhaktas, or Kanishta Bhaktas, or Madhyama Bhaktas, and there's Uttama Bhaktas. And therefore, they have to be treated and given respect accordingly. In fact, Bhaktivinoda Thakura explains in Chaitanya Charita, I believe it is, he talks about respect. He says there's different levels of respect according to the particular status. He calls it maryada. He says there's different levels of respect. He says the first level of respect is to respect a human being. The next level of respect is to respect a civilized human being. Then he says the next level of respect is to respect somebody who is even above a civilized human being, who has a position. He has an important position. He used to be given respect. Then the next level of respect is to respect somebody for their qualities that they may have good qualities. And those who have good qualities are also separated according to their particular designation. Someone may have good qualities in his particular varna as a brahmana, which are the qualities of a brahmana, as we know Krishna describes it in Bhagavad Gita. Someone may have higher qualities as a sannyasi. He says, but above all of them, then us, those who are given the most respect is a Vaishnava, a devotee of the Lord. So there are different levels of respect according to the particular level of devotion or qualities that a person manifests in his life. Everyone has to be recognized by their qualities. Therefore, distinctions do have to be made. But of course, we have to be able to discriminate, and as you said, yes, Yudhishthira Maharaj's level, he was a Mahabhagavata devotee of the Lord, and a Mahabhagavata devotee of the Lord sees everyone serving Krishna except himself. So Yudhishthira Maharaj was thinking, yes, everybody's better than me. But even Mahabhagavata devotees of the Lord, when they come down to the platform to preach, they have to make distinctions. And a preacher, he makes a distinction between four classes. He sees the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he worships him. He sees the devotees of the Lord, he makes friends with them. He sees the innocent living entities who are misled by others, and he's very compassionate towards them. And he sees the atheists who completely deny the existence of God, and he avoids them, upeksha, he neglects them. But even his neglect of them, still, although he neglects them for their own benefit. Because he understands that if he tries to preach to them, because they're atheistic in mentality, they'll become blasphemers, and they'll become even more degraded by their blasphemy. So out of respect for them, he neglects them. He neglects them. And within his heart, he prays to Krishna, please be merciful to this envious human being. He never an ill-wisher of anyone. Vaishnava is never an ill-wisher or never willfully causes pain to every living entity. Because he respects, because he understands the super soul of the heart is in all living entities. Vijayanaya somebody, Brahmani Gavaskani, Sujagasupati Chapandita Sangadarshana. The humble sage, by virtue of true knowledge, sees with equal vision. The general learned Brahman, the elephant, the cow, the dog, and the dog eater. So, yes, for the Mahabhagavata, he thinks everybody's better than me. But in order to preach and to help others, we have to make distinctions. And these distinctions are very clearly, as I've given, both spiritually and even my Bhaktivinoda Thakur, who's given us Chaitanya Charitamrita, he's giving us distinctions about the respect one gets according to their particular status. I already took 10 minutes to answer that question. And I think, I don't know, somebody has to tell me what I should. I will end because I know you have an arctic at 8:30, is that correct? And you have to, all have to honor prasadam before arti. Thank you very much.
Let's just thank